would I feel if I didn't get to be a parent? What's my child's favorite t-shirt right now? Can I remember her first pair of shoes? Can I picture how my child might look at 18, bags packed and leaving for college? Feeling different? Has your state of mind changed? MindSight did that. From your hub, you noticed the rim points on your own wheel of awareness, and you became aware of what you were experiencing. Then you shifted your focus, directing your attention to other rim points, and as a result, your entire state of mind changed. This is the power of your mind, and this is how it can literally and fundamentally transform the way you feel about and interact with your kids. Without MindSight, you can get stuck on your rim, feeling primarily frustrated or angry or resentful. The joy of parenting is gone in that moment. But by returning to your hub and shifting your focus, you can begin to experience joy and gratitude about getting to parent your children, just by paying attention and deciding to direct your attention to new rim points. MindSight can also be immensely practical. For example, think of a moment right now about the last time you got angry with one of your children. Really angry, where you could have lost control. Remember what he did and how furious you felt. At times like these, the anger you feel burns bright and fiery on the rim of your wheel. In fact, it burns so intensely that it far outshines other rim points that represent the feelings and knowledge you have about your kids. Your understanding that your 4-year-old is acting like a normal 4-year-old. Your memory of laughing hysterically together just a few minutes earlier as you played cards. The promise you made that you were going to stop grabbing your children's arms when you're angry. Your desire to model appropriate expressions of anger. This is how we become swept up by the rim when we're not integrated via the hub. The downstairs brain takes over any integrative functioning of the upstairs area, and other rim points are eclipsed by the glare of this single point of your all-consuming anger. Remember flipping your lid? What do you need to do in a moment like this? Yep, you guessed it. Integrate. Use your MindSight. By focusing on your breath, you can at least begin to get back to the hub of your mind. This is the required step that allows us to pull back from being consumed by a single angry point on the rim, or a few of them. Once in the hub, it becomes possible to take in the wider perspective that there are other rim points to keep in mind. You can get some water, take a break and stretch, or give yourself a moment to collect yourself. Then, once you've brought your attention back to your hub, you'll be free to choose how you want to respond to your child, and if necessary, repair any breach in your relationship. This doesn't mean ignoring bad behavior. Not at all. In fact, one of the rim points you'll integrate with the others is your belief in setting clear and consistent boundaries. There are many perspectives you can embrace, from desires for your child to act in a different way to feelings of concern over how you've acted in response. When you link all these different rim points together, when you've used the hub to integrate your mind at that moment, you'll feel a readiness to continue attuned, sensitive parenting. Then, with your whole brain working together, you can connect with your child because you are connected within yourself. You'll have a much better chance of responding the way you want to, with MindSight and the wholeness of who you are, instead of an immediate reaction spurred on by a fiery point on the rim of your wheel. To do your own wheel practice, go to drdansiegel.com. That's drdansiegel.com.
Chapter 6. The Me-We Connection. Integrating Self and Other. Ron and Sandy were fed up. Their 7-year-old, Colin, was a good kid. He didn't cause trouble at school, his friends and their parents liked him, and he generally did what he was supposed to do. But he was, in his parents' words, totally and incurably selfish. He always grabbed the last slice of pizza, even if he still had some on his plate. He begged for a puppy, then showed no interest in even playing with it, much less using the pooper scooper. Even after growing out of his toys, he still refused to let his younger brother play with them. Ron and Sandy knew that a certain amount of egocentrism in children is normal, and they didn't want to change Colin's personality. They wanted to love him for who he was. But at times, it drove them crazy that he often seemed incapable of thinking about other people. When it came to relational skills like empathy, kindness, and consideration, Colin just seemed to be missing the development of that circuit. The breaking point came one day after school when Colin disappeared into the bedroom he shared with his 5-year-old brother, Logan. Ron was in the kitchen when he heard yelling from the boy's room. He went to investigate and discovered a distraught Logan, furious with his big brother and crying over a pile of artwork and trophies. Colin had decided to redecorate the room. He had taken down all of Logan's watercolor paintings and marker drawings hanging on the walls and replaced them with his own posters and baseball cards, which he taped in rows across the largest wall in the room. In addition, he had removed Logan's 2 soccer trophies from the shelf and set up his own bobblehead dolls in their place. Colin had piled all of Logan's belongings in a corner of the room, he explained, so they wouldn't be in the way. When Sandy got home, she and Ron talked about their frustration with their older son. They sincerely believed that there was no malice in Colin's actions. In fact, that was almost the problem. He never even considered Logan's feelings enough to intend to hurt him. He redecorated the room for the same reason he always took the last slice of pizza. He just didn't think about others. This issue is a common one for parents. We want our kids to be caring and considerate so they can enjoy meaningful relationships. Sometimes we fear that because they're not as kind or compassionate or grateful or generous as we want them to be, they never will be. Of course, we can't expect a 7-year-old to behave as if he were an enlightened adult. Sure, we want our kids to become men and women who are strong and forgiving and respectful and loving, but that's a bit much to expect of someone who's just recently learned to tie his shoes. However, while it's important to trust the process and know that much of what we want for our kids will emerge only over time, we can prepare them and steer them toward becoming children, teens, and ultimately adults who are fully capable of participating in relationships and considering the feelings of others. Some people simply have fewer neural connections in their circuitry in charge of empathy and relationships. Just like kids who have trouble reading need to practice and grow those connections in their brains, kids who have difficulty relating to others need to have those connections encouraged and cultivated. And just as a learning disability is a sign of a mental challenge, so is an inability to feel someone else's pain. It's a developmental issue, not necessarily a character problem. Even children who don't seem predisposed to connection and compassion can learn what it means to be in relationship and to fulfill the responsibilities that come with it. That's what this chapter is about. Most of the information we've provided in earlier chapters focuses on how to help develop your child's whole brain in order to develop a strong and resilient sense of me. But like Ron and Sandy, you know that kids need just as much help understanding what it means to become a part of a we, so that they can be integrated with others. In fact, in our ever-changing modern society, learning to move from me to we may be essential for how our children will be able to adapt in our future world. Helping children become a participating member of a we while not losing touch with their individual me is a tall order for any parent. But happiness and fulfillment result from being connected to others while still maintaining a unique identity. That's also the essence of Mindsight, which you'll remember is all about seeing your own mind as well as the mind of another. It's about developing fulfilling relationships while maintaining a healthy sense of self. In the previous chapter, we discussed the first aspect of Mindsight, seeing and understanding our own mind. We talked about helping kids become aware of and integrate the many different parts of themselves via the wheel of awareness. The key concept in this aspect of Mindsight is personal insight. Now we want to turn our attention to the second aspect of Mindsight, developing the ability to see and connect with the minds of others. This connection depends on empathy, on recognizing the feelings, desires, and perspectives of another. Ron and Sandy's son seem to need empathy skills. In addition to developing and integrating his whole brain and the different parts of himself, he needed to be given lots of practice at seeing things from other people's perspectives, seeing other people's minds. He needed to develop this second aspect of Mindsight. Insight plus empathy equals Mindsight. Insight and empathy. If we can encourage these attributes in our kids, we will give them the gift of Mindsight, offering them awareness about themselves and connection with those around them. But how do we do that? How do we encourage our kids to connect with family, friends, and the world while cultivating and maintaining their own individual sense of self? How do we help them learn to share, to get along with siblings, to negotiate playground politics, to communicate well and consider others' feelings? The answers to all these questions emerge from the me-we connection, which we can understand by first looking at how the brain participates in the creation of relationships.
The social brain, wired for we. What do you picture when you think about the brain? Maybe you recall an image from high school biology class, that weird organ floating in the jar, or a picture of it in a textbook. The problem with this single skull perspective, where we consider each individual brain as a lone organ isolated in a single skull, is that it neglects the truth that scientists have come to understand over the last few decades, that the brain is a social organ made to be in relationship. It's hardwired to take in signals from the social environment, which in turn influence a person's inner world. In other words, what happens between brains has a great deal to do with what happens within each individual brain. Self and community are fundamentally interrelated, since every brain is continually constructed by its interactions with others. Even more, studies of happiness and wisdom reveal that a key factor in well-being is devoting one's attention and passions to the benefit of others instead of just focusing on the individual, separate concerns of a private self. The me discovers meaning and happiness by joining and belonging to a we. To put it differently, the brain is set up for interpersonal integration. Just as its many different parts are made to work together, each individual brain is made to relate with the brain of each person we interact with. Interpersonal integration means that we honor and nurture our differences while cultivating our connections with one another. So while we want to help our kids integrate their left and right brain, their upstairs and downstairs brain, their implicit and explicit memories, and so on, we also need to help them understand the extent to which they are connected to their family, friends, classmates, and other people in their communities. By understanding basic facets of the relational brain, we can help our kids develop the mindset that will allow them to enjoy deeper and more meaningful relationships.